I'm Chili Dilly, the personality pickle.
Hi, I'm Greg, and I'm a nerd.
You must be kidding, aren't you?
I have never seen anything like this.
The worst part has been watching the actual watching of the movie.
Some of these were pretty terrible.
Good evening and welcome back to Box Office Battles with Greg and Eric. I want to say welcome to everyone joining us. If you're joining us for the first time on YouTube, Twitch, or Facebook Live, please do us a favor. And what did we say last week? Smash that like and subscribe button. Smash it.
You have to, because if you don't tell them to smash it, they don't know what to do. They've been trained by legions of YouTubers out there to smash that button. Drop a comment. It helps with the algorithm.
Yeah, I guess. It works for me.
We learned a lot in our time off between season one and season two about algorithms.
Yes. I don't remember.
Life and love.
But what we want to get out of the way first is welcome to season two. This is the first episode of season two of Box Office Battles with Greg and Eric. Had a little bit of a break. And now we're in the meat of the summer. It's sweltering. It feels like Texas here in Ohio. It's like 98 degrees.
Oh.
Yeah, it's insane. I can't even play golf in this weather, and that's saying something. But we are back. We're glad to be back, and we want to keep doing this for a while. So again, if you like the podcast, make sure you subscribe on whatever platform you like. We are on all platforms right now. We are on Apple Music. We are on Spotify. We are on Pandora. We're on iHeartRadio. What else are we on? We're on Amazon Music. Did I say that? I don't know. I said Apple. So make sure you subscribe. Subscribe to all of them, and then you'll get notified whenever we got a new episode going up. We also do the live streams. If you're listening to the podcast and you want to watch the live stream sometime, try to keep them to every other Tuesday. But if you go to our Facebook page, and it's Box Office Battle Podcast, go to the Facebook page, like that, follow it. What do we say? Smash that like button. And then you can get all the info, especially like when we do the polls for the movies of whatever the battles are going to be. So you can check that out. You can also find out when we're going live on YouTube. Go to YouTube at Box Office Battle Podcast. You can subscribe there. Smash the subscribe.
Hulk smash.
Yeah.
Did people actually vote? Did we put this thing up? Like, yep. People did what they were told?
Yes, I have the results of the poll. And people can still vote.
Do you know them?
I do know them, yes. So I'm not going to say. We'll find out.
I feel like that.
Is it cheating on my part?
Powerful information that you have that you're not sharing with the rest of the group.
Maybe you should go back on Facebook.
I am that. Listen, of all the reasons for me to go back on Facebook, that ain't it. But I do have an uncle who never graduated from high school, who's got some real strong geopolitical opinions. And so I might get on there just to see how all of this is Obama's fault. But I don't know.
Well, it's great to be back with you for another season. We did a preview last week, kind of went over what we got coming up, and it's going to be a great season. We've got a lot of great categories, but now we're getting into our first category of the second season, and it is Greg and Eric's guilty pleasures. So these are movies that Eric and I both really like and adore, and maybe aren't the most popular films, or they could be, but it's not really for guys like us. You know, maybe they're a chick flick, maybe it's considered a chick flick.
Yes, what in terms of endearment, or
yeah, you know, ordinary like, people.
Yeah,
I saw the porn of that. It was Ordinary Peepholes. It was pretty good. It was good,
like glory hole themed.
Yes, Ordinary Peepholes, if you ever see that. It won some awards, but anyway, so but guilty pleasures, not in that way, not as in watching Ordinary Peoples for 15 minutes or less, depending on who you
are. And not growing up super religious and pleasuring yourself and then feeling guilty about it.
That's
because all of your loved ones in heaven watched you do it. which is what we were told.
And your Uncle Steve from outside your window watched as well.
Yeah, Uncle Lonnie from inside my bed. So
anyway, what we did was we set up a bracket with Eric's four guilty pleasure movies and four of mine, and bracket style, if you've never seen box office battles before, we make the movies go head to head each week until we get down to the final two, and then they go to head to head to be the champion. So real quick, we ran over these during the season preview, but we're going to go over them again for the first episode. These are the picks that we have for the guilty pleasures tournament bracket. So we're starting with the 8 seed, and this is one of Eric's. It is Dude, Where's My Car?
You're trying to tell me every single movie in this list was ranked higher than Dude, Where's My Car on IMDb?
So it was strategic, because setting up the bracket, right?
I bet it was.
I wanted to give your movie the number one seed, your the best IMDb rated one, which happened to be the one that's the number one seed. I was almost revealed it. You almost had me reveal it. Ooh. Before we got to number one. That's a crucial error. But anyway.
Crisis averted.
So then I went down the line after that and did everything by IMDb rating. So you can look these up if you want. It was very close. Dude, Where's My Car?
I trust you. I just feel like.
But it is the number eight seed.
Shouldn't be last place.
So yeah.
It's fine.
Mike Labanovitz says, shout out to Uncle Lonnie. There you go.
Yes. So, federal. Good. Penitentiary inmate number 261-D/69.
Probably listening right now.
And, yes. Hey, Lonnie.
And having a guilty pleasure. But anyway, number seven is one of my films, very close in IMDb rating to Dude, Where's My Car? It is the Linda Blair classic from 1979-1980. That is Roller Boogie. It is a guilty pleasure, and we'll find out when that comes around. After that, it's an Elvis film. This is one of mine from the 60s. This is Spin Out, is our number.
Hey, baby. Hey, baby, we're going to spin out.
Hey, we're going to win this race. Which is basically what it is. We're going to
spin it on out.
I think this is the movie where we're going to win this race comes from. I'm not sure. We'll have to watch it and find out. Number five is one of Eric's. This is Legally Blonde. He's already clapping for it.
Yay.
He's going to explain why this is a guilty pleasure for him when we get into it. Number four is The Devil Wears Prada, the number four scene, another one of Eric's. Number three is one of mine, near and dear to my heart. It is Deep Blue Sea, is the number three seed. Samuel L. Jackson and
that lady,
LJ, and the lady right there that's about to be eaten by a shark that has hormones that makes it smarter. Number two is the Lonely Island film, pop star, Never Stop, Never Stopping. That's one of my guilty pleasures. Love this film. Not everybody likes it, but I certainly do. And the number one seed is Eric's, and is the highest one of all of these in on IMDb, highest rated, and it is Moulin Rouge, the musical with Nicole Kidman and Ewan Obi-Wan McGregor. Yes, not to be confused with the MMA fighter. But here's a look at the bracket and how it all shakes out. We've got the seeds for you right there. Moulin Rouge will go up against Dude, Where's My Car. Pop Star will go up against Roller Boogie. Deep Blue Sea will go up against Elvis. Elvis against the Sharks? Cool. I love it. That could be like a new, you know, like they had Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. They could.
Yeah.
Elvis versus Jaws. That would be awesome.
You just take any two like pop culture references from two different points in time.
Yeah.
Put them together.
Yes.
And now we've got Shakespeare versus dinosaurs or something. I don't know.
Janine Garofalo versus carnivores.
Yes. What a random callback. Why was she on your mind?
I don't know. She's always on my mind, actually.
Well, that is nice. You should write her and tell her that. She's not dead.
But I'm going to get on that script for Elvis versus Jaws. I think that would be great. Can we, if it were only Robert Shaw were alive and we could get him to do the film, it would be great.
You live in a world where ChatGPT exists, so I think that this can be done quickly.
We're going to find out. But tonight, in this bracket, is the bottom left side that you see right there. We are going to have Legally Blonde versus The Devil Wears Prada. The four seed versus the fifth seed. We're going to kick it right off. Now, we're going to start with Legally Blonde. And Eric, I want you to explain to me, and I'll do the same when it's my turn.
Okay.
Why is Legally Blonde a guilty pleasure for you?
Legally Blonde is the reason that we're doing this category.
I did not know that.
That is the reason I suggested it, because, as I explained last week,
yeah,
which was really fun, by the way, and it makes me realize that if we didn't have to watch all these fucking movies, like, just think about how great these shows could be, because yeah, we didn't have to watch shit, and it was still fun. I also have a question for you.
Okay.
What do you call a Frenchman wearing sandals?
I have no idea.
Felipe Floppy.
That's a guilty pleasure joke, dude. That's like some...
Tell me if you liked it or you didn't like it.
I liked it.
Delivery. Where do you rank that?
Okay, delivery was better than the actual joke itself. So I'll give you 6.5 for delivery, 5 overall. The Russian judge actually put down 4. So,
well, you throw out the top and bottom scores, so I think we're good. Exactly. Okay, so anyway, Legally Blonde is the reason we do this, and it is because throughout the course of daily life, perhaps I'm doing the dishes, and I have a, I don't know if you've ever heard of this, Greg, it's called an open concept floor plan. And so, kitchen is basically in the living room, attached to the breakfast nook, where the stairs also go upstairs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
it's all real incestuous, and
it's for people who hate walls, like literally,
yes,
don't want anybody to have any type of alone time. Just
nothing load open, nothing load bearing in this bitch. So if I'm doing the dishes and watching television, or I'm folding laundry, generally speaking, I'm watching soccer, but sometimes, like right now, maybe there's not soccer on. There's not a lot of soccer on. So I might be flipping through the channels, and sometimes it'll be like on TNT, Shawshank Redemption is on. And I'm like, well, I'm going to watch Shawshank Redemption, whether we're at the beginning, middle, whether he's strolling up on a beach to Red working on a boat, like, you know, I'm doing it, right? Sure. But it's not always Shawshank Redemption that's on. Sometimes it's Legally Blonde. And I will still just immediately, like, get excited. Like, all right, Legally Blonde is on. And I'll, wherever it is in the movie, I will just turn it on, and I'll just fold my clothes, and I'll just laugh at the same old parts I always laugh at. And so that's what got me thinking about doing this category, is like, I'm 47, and certainly I couldn't be accused of being the most macho of men, but I don't have much business enjoying a, what, 2001 kind of girly centric comedy with Reese Witherspoon and Selma Blair, right?
Yeah.
But I do a whole lot, and so that was kind of the criteria for me, was, and that also, spoiler alert, is how I'm going to make my decisions on this, because I want to imagine that I am doing the laundry and I turn the TV on and I'm scrolling through the stations, and which of these four that I chose is the one where I go, yes,
that one
the most. So, right? Because all of them I will be excited to see.
Oh, gotcha. What are you wearing when you're doing the laundry?
I have a maid outfit, but it's not French maid, yeah, like Felipe Floppy. It's well, I live in Texas, right? So it's a sombrero.
A sombrero with a loincloth.
Yeah. So,
well, everything's dirty, so it's all in the laundry. So I'm, you know, just wondering.
Okay, not every laundry that gets done. And maybe you don't know this. Maybe you don't do the laundry.
I really don't.
I'm doing the laundry in your fantasies?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I mean,
well, that makes one of us.
Did you not get that? Anyway, but yeah. So, all right. So you've explained it. I watched this back when it first came out. I vaguely remembered it. I enjoyed it. I remember that. I did like it. So this was the first time I'd watched it in about 20 years, which was crazy to think about this being over 20 years old, nearly 25.
Right. Which means she's like 50 now.
Yeah.
Which is so gross.
But the thing was that
for women, not for men.
I said to my wife as we were watching it, I'm like, so say if I was in 84 and I'm a teenager and I'm going to see Ghostbusters in the theater, this is the equivalent to something that came out in 1960 that my mom would try to make me watch. And I'd be like, ew, get, you know, I don't want to watch that.
Like this bullshit Elvis movie we're about to watch.
Hey, that's not.
Okay. Sorry.
That Elvis is excluded from that. Elvis is excluded. But yeah, it's like I was going to say Shirley MacLaine. Like my mom liked Shirley MacLaine and had a lot of the movies from the 60s, and I wouldn't want to watch them. So I can only imagine that kids of today, 13, 14 year olds, do they want to watch Reese Witherspoon? I don't know. What does everybody else?
Okay. Well, let me tell you who does enjoy watching Reese Witherspoon that I found out yesterday.
Okay.
I went to my son's soccer game, and unlike the week before when he scored 7 goals, he scored 1 goal yesterday. They lost, but my dad came down from Oklahoma and surprised us at the game. So I rode back with him and the kids and back to my house, and we were just sitting there visiting, and he said, we're talking about some work stuff and some other stuff. And he said, well, what are you doing for your podcast? And I said, well, we're actually getting started tomorrow night. We're watching Legally Blonde and Devil Wears Prada. It's guilty pleasure movies. And dad says, I've never seen Devil Wears Prada, but I really like Legally Blonde. And I said, and my dad's 79
and gay
and very, very gay.
He likes Singing in the Rain. So, you know,
me and my brother are just miracles of closeted homosexualism.
Your mom was a beard. It's okay. They have occasionally one squirts out and there you go.
Maybe that's why none of us talk to my mom anymore. Who knows? But
I'm sorry.
He said, yeah, I love Legally Blonde and I love Reese Witherspoon.
Nice.
And I said, like father, like son, I guess, because like this was my choice. And he said, well, my vote is for Legally Blonde.
But he's not seen the other one.
But he's not seen the other one. So who
knows? His vote is null and void. You have to see both.
I tried to tell him, well, you can't enforce that. I mean, there's no way that you know that.
Well,
I'm sure you're just going to go with whatever suits your agenda for my movies, trying to make it through to whichever one of your movies gets through. Yep. I already know how
it's exactly. Works. It's exactly election interference.
So I want to talk about Legally Blonde.
Let's do that.
Because, like you said, 2001, it stars Reese Witherspoon, as everybody knows, as Elle Woods and her dog Bruiser Woods. And she's kind of a typical California sorority president, extraordinaire, very girly girl, and her very well-off, well-to-do East Coast boyfriend, who she believes will be proposing at the beginning of the movie, ends up breaking up with her because he is going to law school at Harvard. He can't be tied down with some hot bimbo. He says he needs a Jackie, not a Marilyn. He's off to Harvard. Guess what she does, Greg?
She decides that she's going to become a beautician.
You didn't have to guess because you watched the movie in theory.
In theory.
She studies hard, takes the LSAT, needs to score a 175, scores a 179. She gets into Harvard, wows the selection committee with her video submission to get in. Now, as we go through this, and I'm only setting that we don't usually go through all of the plot to this movie.
Right.
But as I was thinking about this today, Greg, like this literal story from beginning to end could have been written by Shakespeare with different characters and different job titles or whatever. Because you get a fish out of water protagonist.
Gotcha.
You get a kind of new place, you know, a new setting that we're not used to. You get an antagonist who, spoiler alert, later on becomes friends. You've got a sympathetic, you know, wrongly accused person that we're trying to defend. And I just feel like Shakespeare, I mean, this is basically Othello. Okay, I chose that one because I don't have any idea what Othello is about.
Do you know any Shakespeare other than Romeo and Juliet? Maybe a Hamlet? Could have been
Macbeth.
Macbeth. What's Macbeth
about? On the road to Venice. Versailles.
On the road.
I also know.
But do you know what they're about? That's the key. What is Macbeth about? No Wikipedia. Stop looking it up. But
one of my favorite of his was The Tempest.
Ah, yes.
The Tempest. And judging by the book cover, it's about a woman who stares off into a forest.
A tempest. She stares into a tempest.
And then there's Julius Caesar, and that's about...
Yep, that's about the guy who invented
Julius Caesar.
Invented the salad.
Salads.
That was good. Taming of the Shrew.
Midsummer Night's Dream.
Yes.
My gosh.
Well, this is definitely like Midsummer Night's Dream.
Okay, see, that's what I was trying to say. I just got them mixed up. Anyway, this is fairly formulaic.
It is.
But it's got enough... I mean, so... For something to be as enjoyable as this is for someone like me who probably shouldn't enjoy this, it has to have some heart. And Elle Woods is this incredibly optimistic person throughout, people doubting her, people... inviting her to a party and telling her it's a costume party, and she shows up
rude.
And she handles it gracefully.
Yeah, that was,
and with great aplomb.
She had two great aplombs in her costume.
Yes. I like that part whenever I am folding laundry and I miss it.
That was so sexist of me, but you know,
like, damn,
I didn't put it in the movie. Oh, I didn't put it in Bridget Jones' Diary either, which happened as well in that movie. The same thing.
So this is like a trope, right? Because I was thinking of this, the inviting someone to a party under the auspices of it being a costume party. Ha ha, it's not. Ha ha, you're the only one in a costume.
I used to do that. I used to do that all the time in high school, except I used to do the opposite. I would invite somebody to a costume party and not tell them it was a costume party.
Yeah.
And they would
burn
that. I mean, how silly they looked showing up in ordinary clothes. Oh, how we laughed. But that's what I used to do. Just to change.
What a sucker.
Just to change it up from the regular.
Nice job looking like a regular person, sucker.
No, but I hear what you're saying. The movie, I will say this. It is, like you said, formulaic. It follows the conventional, even for like 2001, going back into the 90s, hell, going back into the 80s, these type
2001.
What do you mean?
The outer space movie?
No, I'm talking about the year it was made.
Oh.
And I'm talking about,
like, this has nothing to do with that.
The master
at all.
Yeah. But it would be interesting if we had L and in outer space going up against Hal the robot, L versus Hal. I'm going to get on that script too. But no, I'm saying in the year 2001, these type of movies were, these movies were cranked out a lot. I mean, American Pie, Old School. No, they weren't.
The House Bunny.
The House Bunny. Yeah, it's another one. And then you go back in the 90s and you've got My Cousin Vinny, and you got Eddie Murphy and The Distinguished Gentleman. You have these fish out of water type of comedies where they get into a, like you said, a new setting that they're not familiar with, and we all laugh at how uncomfortable they are, but then they rise above it and become this, you know, they overcome everything to become the master of this new environment. And but here's the thing, like you said, it has to, you can do this over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. But the key to doing a movie like this well, like Legally Blonde, which I think does it well, is you have to have characters that are likable. You have to have characters, the villains have to be kind of detestable.
Yep.
And you have to have all the supporting cast that adds something so that you're always got something to look at that will make you smile. Because to be honest with you, when I started it, you know, the very beginning when she's hanging with her girlfriends, it's fine. It's, but the screaming and the, doing this, it was like, okay, and But when it took off was when you see Bruiser for the first time and you start seeing the little subtle jokes that they do in the beginning, like her showing up to Harvard with the moving company, with the moving van and calling her Malibu Barbie. I'm starting to snicker. It starts building on it. And then you build in the supporting cast. And as the supporting cast gets more and more screen time, they just accent the whole film. So you don't worry about the fact that it's, number one, totally implausible for this to happen. For it is implausible. Give me that look.
What do you mean?
A blonde girl at Harvard, for crying out.
Okay, right. Racist. It's not implausible. I think the other part of it, yeah, because you're right. All of the supporting characters have these unique little personality quirks and they very much lean into some of the stereotypical personalities you find at a East Coast college, you know, or like that type of thing.
Yep.
And so, but it also, there's also an element of everything that's happening to her is unfair. She's nice. She worked hard to get into Harvard. You know, it's like she's probably one of the most mistreated characters in film history. And I don't take that lightly. In fact, I was thinking about this and I was thinking back to one of the first movies we did, Schindler's List.
Yeah. And?
And it's just like, it feels like some of those Jews probably would watch this and go, she like really didn't deserve that.
I did not know you were going
to. Did you wonder if I was?
Yeah. The connection.
I think really anytime somebody invokes Schindler's List, you really got to be on attention.
When they made those poor people in the concentration camp dress up like Playboy bunnies, that's something they can really relate to when they watch this film. So. Yeah.
And I can joke about this because I did have a great uncle. who died in the Holocaust.
Okay. That's funny.
Well, he fell out of a guard tower at Auschwitz and died on impact. And it was really sad for like all of the other Third Rikers kind of in the.
Well, it's
general vicinity.
It's been a fun podcast, everybody. Thank you for joining us on Box Office Battles for another season.
Y'all smash that subscribe button if you haven't already.
Oh my God. How did we get here? Stop throwing.
Because she is mistreated as were some of the characters, minor characters in Schindler's List. And that's all I was saying.
Okay.
So obviously, this film is more fun than Schindler's List, and we're not comparing it. We're going to compare it to Devil Wears Prada later on. The movie, if you're going to, like you said, if it's going to be formulaic, if it's going to kind of check all of the boxes for all of the traditional things that like Western audiences look for in these types of films, it checks every one of those boxes. It has a courtroom scene at the end. You know, so if you're going to set this at law school, and you're going to, this is where she commits a felony for the first time in representing herself as an attorney when she is not one. Maybe it's not a felony in, where's Harvard? Massachusetts.
Massachusetts. I think you could do a lot of things in Massachusetts that people don't care about. So just saying.
That's such an odd statement to make.
I lived there for a few years. It's pretty open. It's a pretty open
when story. You were at Harvard and you were a janitor there, and one time a professor left some math on a whiteboard.
Yep.
Happened next?
I asked him how you like them apples. I said,
yeah.
Do you like apples? Yeah. It's what a comeback. It's good stuff.
Got him.
But no, it like you said, it has a great courtroom scene. Of course, it reminds me of dating myself, Perry Mason, those type of environment. They said that I saw that in the when reading up on the film that it was inspired by My Cousin Vinny and that scene with Marissa Tomei in that film where she does the similar thing. So again, these movies borrow from each other, but it works really well in this one. I thought the courtroom scene was hilarious.
And the courtroom scene is great. They're cross-examining the obviously gay pool boy, but he is claiming that he is straight and was having an affair with the accused. And they get him into a line of questioning and ask him, you know, how long have you worked for whatever? 6 months. Well, how long are you having an affair? Well, 3 months. What's the name of your boyfriend? And he goes, Chuck. Yeah. And he goes, oh, sorry, I thought you meant friend. He's just a friend. And then yeah. They pan over to the courtroom audience and Chuck stands up and he goes, you bitch, storms out. I laugh every single time that happens, Greg, and I know it's coming.
That's the good old Bugs Bunny Wabbit season, duck season trick where they just keep firing things at you. Wabbit yep. season, duck season, duck season, Wabbit season. Yeah, gotcha.
And L. Woods.
Yes.
Who in a matter of months goes from kind of ditzy, you know, college sorority president. She is now the lead attorney, and she uses her knowledge of getting a perm to get her client acquitted of murder. And Luke Wilson is there, not the Wilson brother that goes, oh, wow,
the other
all the time.
Yeah.
The other one, the one without the fucked up nose. He kind of just seems very dull to me, Luke Wilson. Is he still alive? Does anyone know?
I believe he is. He's good in Old School, but again, he plays the same type of character.
Yeah.
Now that you mention it, the character in Old School, they're very interchangeable. Idiocracy was really good.
Yeah, he was good in Idiocracy. Oh, he's from Dallas. Did you know that? That the Wilsons are all from Dallas? Well, now that
explains everything.
That he's so dull?
Yeah, that explains it all.
It's too hot here to be anything but dull.
Yeah, he's there. He's not, you know, this weird thing, now that you mention it, and looking back on the film, he's supposedly the love interest, but there's no spark there in that film. Do you notice that? Like, I don't notice him, like, sweeping. He's very passive and, hey, I'll do whatever you want.
I don't get that from him at all. I think you're being a hater. We should probably get into all of the reasons why. Are you jealous of him?
No.
Do you think he has a bigger penis than you do?
It depends on how tall he is.
He's 5'4".
Oh, then definitely not worried about that. I got him there.
Wait, if you're tall, you have you're.
That's the way I look at it.
I thought it was the size of your like wrist to your middle finger, yeah, or something.
And yeah, your body is proportionate.
I hope that means hard, because
I don't know.
Christ,
you need to be a doctor if not. But yeah, no, I don't have any jealous tendencies to him. I just like, now that I look back on it, I didn't find him to be a great chemist, have a great chemistry.
Okay, but did you ever see Legally Blonde 2, Red, White, and Blonde?
No, but I did add it to the list. I don't think I've ever seen that. I'll watch it after this one. No, I'm not saying it makes the movie bad. I think he's kind of an afterthought, because the whole movie, she chases her ex-boyfriend.
Well, kind of. Up until about the beginning of Act 3, she's still... Are you hungover?
No. I just love...
Why are you drinking Gatorade?
I love Gatorade.
Did you have a tough workout today?
I did.
Bro.
I did.
Yeah, me too.
I made some gains.
Is that how you say it?
I don't know.
You making my gains?
I heard that once somewhere. As I passed by a gym, I heard.
You know what a zombie vegetarian eats? Grains.
Oh, good Lord. So you got a dad joke almanac sitting in front of you right now. That's good.
No, I just think Felipe Falapi and
you got a million
grains.
That's very good.
Are pretty good. All right. Thank you. So, let me ask you a question.
Okay.
Can you see why this would register for me as a guilty pleasure movie? Like, sure. Now that I explained to you the category and my criteria, and now you've seen the movie.
Yes.
Like, that kind of comes together in a way that rationalizes where I'm coming from.
Yes, I totally agree that this is a extremely guilty pleasure movie. I felt that way watching it. I felt guilty. I was checking my windows, making sure nobody saw me watching it. No, I'm just kidding. I really enjoyed it. I'm not going to lie. I hadn't seen it since it came out, and I liked it then. I thought it was guilty pleasure for the reason of the plot being so over the top. Doing research into the film, I didn't realize that this was kind of autobiographical, that this girl that went to Stanford Law, we overcame being a sorority queen to be able to get into Stanford Law and kind of encounter these same type of prejudices and did a book on it. And that's what the movie's based on. Didn't know that. So
no shit.
See, apparently you didn't either. But when so the thing is that when I saw that it wasn't as implausible as I thought, granted the rest of the movie, I mean, they string everything, there's so many convenient plot devices and everything, but in the bottom line, there's so many likable things that make the move, that carry the movie along. You know, there's no downers in the film. Even when she's being mistreated, it's passable, and then she bounces right back and something funny happens.
So listen, Legally Blonde is great.
Yeah.
Every single time it comes on TV, I know I'm going to be entertained,
yes,
uplifted. And Greg, at the end of it, I'm going to see the world in a little more joyous and positive light, because that's the effect that Elle Woods has on me personally.
Yeah. And that makes a difference.
And all of us.
Yes.
I mean, it would be nice. And I think I often am jealous of people who kind of just go with the flow and don't get too aggravated about things. And like, I get really aggravated about things, and I'm pretty opinionated. I try really hard in my everyday life to not, you know, get into that stuff. It doesn't matter. I don't need to debate every person I see on everything that I believe. You know, it's just not worth it. And it's never made any relationship that I ever had better by arguing with somebody over shit like that. Yeah. So, but there are people who are just kind of eternally optimistic, and I just think it is probably a great way to live. I'll never experience it because I'm too mad at everything all the time. But I can imagine that under the right set of circumstances, I could just be happy.
Okay.
Well,
what circumstances would that be? I mean, just like everything has to be perfect, because that's the thing. If that's the case, then you're striving toward that, and you're always going to be frustrated. So you have to be able to find out how to be happy when the world is like the guy in the meme with the flames are everywhere, and he's drinking his coffee saying, "I'm fine." That's where you've got to find your eternal optimism, like Elle Woods. So I'm just saying,
this is fine.
All right, there you go. Perfect. You're working on it. Well, you know, the thing is that it is, like I said, it's a sugary film. There's nothing wrong with it at all. Especially if it's a Saturday afternoon and you got nothing else to watch. Yeah, it harkens back to older comedies. I think that we've touched on that. Good performances. The cast is amazing, considering that in 2001, a lot of them were starting off. Jennifer Coolidge, we haven't even really brought her up.
Yeah.
I forgot she was in it, and I didn't realize she was in it that much. And again, talking about the supporting cast bringing, you know, lightheartedness to the film, she... Like, without her character, I may have liked the film less, because she adds a lot of spice to that type of comedy, where she's just got the delivery down, the awkward smiles at the UPS guy. It's just great stuff. So you have this little subplot with her being helped by Elle to kind of come out of her shell, and it does a great bit for the movie. And other characters, like, say, we mentioned Selma Blair's in it, Linda Cardinelli, who's like 25, Ali Larder, you know, we already talked about Luke Wilson, Victor Garber. So many people were in it, Raquel Welch. So it had a really amazing cast for that type of film. So it has that. It has anything that you would want from that kind of film. And I truly looked at my wife, I said, this is definitely a guilty pleasure film. Eric did pick right. So good job.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Well, sadly, it can't just win by default because we do have to put it up against another movie. Oh, man. That I enjoy for different reasons. This is The Devil Wears Prada. It's Meryl Streep and Anne Hathaway. Yeah. Stanley Tucci is in it as the fairy godmother character. No pun intended. And how long do you think I've been sitting on that one?
That's about Stanley Tucci. Six,
yeah.
Sorry. Sorry. It's first thing that popped into my head. Sometimes that's a problem. It is a problem.
How long you think I've been sitting on that thing? And so when this one, so let's just go back to the circumstance. I'm folding laundry. I turn the TV on. I scroll down and I see Devil Wears Prada. I'm going to do the same thing. I am going to stop and I'm going to watch it from wherever it is in the movie to the end, but for vastly different reasons than Legally Blonde. So actually, I want you to take the first crack at this one only because you had not seen this before.
I had never seen it. And it
was, you had heard of it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I knew of it, knew of the book. It just, when it came around, it was one of those, I think that if we rented it, we didn't go see it at the movie theater, of course, because I didn't see it. But my wife may have watched it without me, and I kind of maybe caught a couple minutes and went, I'm not, you know, I didn't feel like watching it. I don't know fashion or high fashion. I was never into
that. You don't say.
Unlike your father. But anyway, I'm not a big fan of that kind of stuff. So I just never had interest. So this was like, I was kind of cool. I get to watch something I've not seen that is kind of considered a pretty decent film. So let's check it out. So I watched it on a Saturday night, and I had sat on my porch and had a couple of bourbons, had a nice cigar, got loose, ready to laugh.
Oh, and I should have told you.
Yeah, I was ready to laugh. And I felt like one of those Vietnam vets that kept having flashbacks, and the bombs were going off and the chopper blades, and I'm sitting there, you know, pouring another glass of bourbon going, holy shit, this is abusive.
Yeah.
It is dark. And I did not expect it. I figured from what I saw in the previews that their people are snarky. But dude, I was like, I had no idea. And some people don't look at it that way. Some people see it as it's just lighthearted. But I didn't see it that way at all. I was like, they're evil. They really are the devil. The Miranda, the played by Meryl Streep. I mean, horrible. Just the worst person I've, probably one of the worst person I've ever seen in a movie.
And it's probably made worse by the fact that this is very much, that character is based on Anna Wintour,
yeah,
who is the editor-in-chief, or was at one time, of Vogue magazine, I believe.
Yeah.
And kind of notoriously frigid, notoriously high expectations and work ethic. And if I'm here at the office at 4 a.m., you need to be here at the office at 3:30 a.m. to prepare for my arrival at the office. And yes, she is. It's this crazy, abusive, manipulative use of power. And obviously, you know, we'll kind of get into some of the plot and as we move on into the film, and you realize that she is a broken, scared. I'm sure fashion as an industry is probably particularly problematic because of the emphasis on appearance. And so older women who are in that industry probably face a lot of pressure in aging gracefully or on the other hand, not aging at all. And so doing everything you can to kind of maintain youth. I mean, this is a $1 billion industry of, and I don't mean this to be dramatic, but kind of preying upon insecurities. You know, I was reading the other day that like Facebook's algorithm would serve up ads for makeup when certain demographic of women would like delete a photo from their profile. The thought being that they were unhappy with the way they looked, and let's serve up an ad for a product that promises, you know, whatever. So, you know, we see Miranda. She's still horrible, but she's kind of this tragic figure, right? She's our antagonist. And we learn later on that she's not just mean for mean's sake. She's mean because she's actually a miserable shell of her former self, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, I get that from her marital problems and the struggles with other agencies, struggles within her own magazine to trying to oust her, and the work that she has to do. I get all that. It was one of those things that maybe I went in with the wrong mindset. I'm sure I did, because I was thinking, you know, like, I was thinking more Legally Blonde-ish. And it's a far cry from Legally Blonde. On the surface, you would think that these are both movies made primarily for women, one about the fashion industry, one about a girl who loves fashion, that there would be some similarities. And really, it where Legally Blonde takes a premise that is on the ludicrous side and plays it for laughs and plays it over the top, Devil Wears Prada takes a kind of realistic premise and doesn't play it so much for laughs as plays it for a realism and using actual dialogue. So it, to me, and it reminds me, as a comedy, it reminds me more of when we did Slapshot. We did the sports comedies, mm-hmm. where Slapshot was a lot more darker than Caddyshack or Happy Gilmore, because it had that edge to it of the underlying problem within the community that supported minor league hockey. Now, that being said, it totally killed my buzz. It was like, I was like a happy little camper. My wife had seen the film. She's looking at me, and I think every 5 minutes I'm just going, and I will tell you why. So I'm going to explain this. I'm going to try to make this as brief as I can. But everybody knows, and people who've listened to the show, I was in the Air Force for 22 years. And I went through basic training. Basic training was not really so much like Devil Wears Prada. They yell at you a lot. They say a lot of nasty things, but there's tons of people there. You don't really, you just kind of get in line. But midway through my Air Force career, I decided to go into recruiting as a temporary duty for 3 years. And my first year was pretty decent. I had a good time. And then my second year, I got an individual. I'm not going to give his name out. He took over as my flight chief, and he was Miranda times 1,000. So our first meeting with the 6 recruiters that are under him, he says, if you don't produce for me, he does the Glengarry Glen Ross speech. You see this gold watch? Coffee is for clothes. I'm like, dude, he's getting this from freaking Glengarry Glen Ross. But he told, what he did to me started off a really bad relationship. He said, I have the ID card of every airman that I've personally kicked out of the Air Force, and I'll put yours in my desk drawer as well. I'll put your family on the street. I'll make you effing homeless. And then it just started from there. He motivated through those type of tactics, and none of us appreciated it, or none of us responded to it very well. It was a very, very, very dark time in my life. And so I dealt with that constantly. So for an example, like what ends up happening with Andrea in the film, I was trying to stay fit. I'm in the Air Force, but I'm working 12 hours a day or more. And I have gym time that I have built into the day, but I have my cell phone on me. He knew when I went to the gym because it was on his calendar. It was on everybody's calendar. He would literally call me at the gym and ask where I was, why I wasn't in the office, knowing he would do it every day at the same time. Anytime I went to the gym, where are you at? Why aren't you in your office? Why are you at this school? Why are you doing this? And it was, you know why? You know. Oh, yeah, I forgot. Bullshit. He found out that 3 of us recruiters lived in the same cul-de-sac. We were all friends and we all hung out together. He deliberately moved in a house across the street, and he would not go to his office. He would sit at his kitchen table and watch us through his window when we left for work. We ended up having to park down the street and sneak in our own back doors, because if you drove home and it was 6:30 at night, your cell phone would go off and go, "What the F you doing home? You know, what's
what in the world, dude?"
So I could go
into people like that.
Oh, well, happy endings do exist, because we all survived it. We went through, there's more. I'm not going to get into too much. Maybe over beers, we can go, I'll tell you some really good stories. But in the end, what I found out, a friend of mine sent me a newspaper clipping that he
got AIDS.
Yep, he did. And he died of AIDS. But any
full blown AIDS. Wow.
No, what ended up happening was he ended up threatening his new troop down in South Carolina, where I was in Boston at the time. He had moved down there and became a superintendent. So he had more people under him. And he was known for threatening to throat punch people, put people through a wall, blah, blah, blah. He'd say it all the time. Well, a bunch of them recorded him and then took it up to the inspector general, and he got his ass kicked out. So that was a nice end of the story that I found out much later. I was actually in England. Somebody emailed me the newspaper clipping. So anyway, said all that to say this, that this movie triggered all of those responses. And I get it, it's fashion, but the way they treated Anne Hathaway in this film, and Emily Blunt, and anybody that worked under Meryl
Streep. Yeah.
I had so much sympathy. I couldn't find it funny because I had been in that situation. Instead, I was having Vietnam flashbacks, and yeah. I had to tell the wife. I said, "I'm sorry. This is not for me because of the abuse. I get where it can be funny for other people, but when you go through something like that, it's tough. I mean, it was on the verge of suicidal at times for everybody. There was a time, last story I'll say, was that all six of us were sitting around a table having drinks at a conference, and we started talking about our problems, and one guy said, "I don't know how many times I've driven over an overpass and just thought of turning right."
Yeah.
And everybody at the table went, "Yeah, me too. Yeah, I feel the same way." And that's what this asshole did to all of us, and that's what she did. So and I'm sure he had his problems. I guarantee you he did. His mother didn't love him enough. Maybe his father sodomized him. I don't know. But I know that he took it out on us, and that didn't necessarily make it fair. So when Meryl Streep, they show her that she's broken, I'm still like, fuck her. I don't like her. I can't, she'll never win me over. And at the end, where, spoiler alert for those who haven't seen Devil Wears Prada, in the end, where Anne Hathaway kind of gives up on it and goes back, I felt it like when I went back to regular Air Force and I got out of recruiting, I was like, why the hell did I even do that in the first place?
I have a counterpoint question. Good
point. Yes.
Have you ever considered that maybe you deserved it?
Maybe a little. No, I was only working 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, a little bit on Saturday. But no, I probably deserved it a little bit. But no, yeah. And that's another thing. It was like, I felt for Anne Hathaway. There's the whole Stanley Tucci moment when she's, where he kind of lays down the law. People would kill to be where you're at. Blah, 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 blah. Shut up. Stop whining. My problem with that was, yes, people would kill to have Andrea's job in Devil Wears Prada, and she's lucky to have it. But that doesn't excuse the fact that she has no personal life, that she's on call 24/7 because somebody is infantile.
Well, and so that is kind of, we get into, because we've talked a lot about our antagonist here, but Anne Hathaway is kind of co-lead in this movie, and she's the protagonist. She doesn't care about the fashion industry. She just wants to be a journalist.
Right.
And she says early in the movie that, you know, it was either this or, I don't know, some like farmer's almanac, something or other, you know. But it's a character study in the effects of that type of environment, that type of mistreatment, that type of abuse.
Yeah.
And like you said, Miranda does this to everybody. I put that screenshot in there because you see in this moment the power that she wields over an entire industry of designers and fashion, because this guy is really excited to show his spring formal collection, and all she does is kind of move her head down and furrow her brow, and he knows it. He senses it immediately and rushes the models off the stage, and it's just kind of this big to do. And but we watch Anne Hathaway's character kind of start out kind of ignorant to what's going on, and they explain a lot of fashion stuff to her. There's a scene she's wearing a very plain blue sweater, and they kind of purses her lips. That's right, Mike. Yep. And Miranda laughs and is like, you know, you think all of this is, you know, not for you. But she goes on to say, you know, Oscar de la Renta had this color in his spring 1996 thing. And then a year later, it starts showing up in other things. And as it works down, you know, the fashion from top to bottom, and, you know, we have like fast fashion, you know, stores. And for a while, that was your Forever 21s and your H&Ms. And now it's online with Shein and Temu and, you know, like these other kind of online.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And so that part I find interesting. And then we watch Andrea kind of lean into it, right? So Stanley Tucci comes in, and I said fairy godmother, but he does kind of act in that role of kind of confidant and advisor, and kind of holds her hand through, this is how you navigate this really intense situation you find yourself in. And Andy leans into it, and all of a sudden she's more fashionable, and, you know, taking expensive handbags to her friends and, you know, this kind of stuff. But we see from her friends that she's changing. She's got this boyfriend who made her a grilled cheese that has $12 worth of Jarlsberg in it.
Jarlsberg.
I just want to kick him in the fucking teeth every time he says, it's got $12 worth of in 2006.
Right?
How much fucking Jarlsberg?
Yeah, that's
like, you're a chef. Lot. Like, quit this shit.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
And,
I didn't like
him. And so
I did like Entourage, though.
I've never seen Entourage.
Oh, yeah.
Not a single second of that show.
Oh, interesting.
I feel like I'd be very annoyed.
You probably would be. It's a bros type of show, yeah.
And I'm all about
the hoes.
It's a weird thing to say.
Well, you picked Devil Wears Prada and Legally Blonde, so you're hoes before bros, apparently. You wouldn't like Entourage. Maybe
no, girls, I just think that I have...
Girls is more your speed.
I have a sophisticated and open-minded view of movies that traditionally... Cinema that traditionally eschews the male viewpoint.
Nice.
And whatever. So... Yeah, I mean, she leans into it so hard that she starts to become cutthroat. She starts to become like Miranda. And, you know, as it goes on and she starts to see the inner workings of, you know, this machine and how it chews people up and spits them out, then she turns her back on that. And by the end, she just wants to go get a job at the Des Moines Register or whatever it is. And but I think what I like about this is that there's a lot of character development in a really short amount of time, specifically for Andy. And I mean, we see the naivety and innocence, we see the kind of cluelessness and ignorance into, well, she says at the beginning that she's smart and she'll work hard, and watching that turn into success, but at what cost? And I think that's to me the moral of this whole story for both of these characters. At what cost success? And I just think it's done maybe not really well, maybe there's films who take that premise that you can be successful if you're willing to basically be a psychopath, not care about others, not take into consideration how, you know, your actions affect others. And you can be successful in doing that, but at what cost? And maybe, you know, I don't watch any movies except for the movies we watch for this show. That's why I'm on this show, because I'm dumb, because I don't know anything about movies. So you probably have a handful of examples of movies that are kind of centered around that theme, and they probably do it better. But I think this one, I mean, first of all, Meryl Streep's acting is fantastic. I don't know that I can say the same for Anne Hathaway, but Meryl Streep, for sure, as she generally is at the top of her game in this. And, you know, I'm impressed, even if it's an average movie, I'm impressed with that in an hour and 49 minutes, you can have that much development and kind of that much exploration into that complex topic. Right. So, that's kind of why I picked this one. It's why I always enjoy watching Devil Wears Prada. I watch it again tomorrow if it came on TV.
It's interesting. So all I can say as far as in response, because you make great points, and I agree with all of them. I think that I thought Anne Hathaway was great in it. I thought Emily Blunt was great in her role. Mm-hmm. She comes off as very snarky, and then just like with Legally Blonde, they become friends in the end. Even though I thought that Anne Hathaway or Andy should not have been guilty shitting all over Emily, because Emily shit all over her. Why should she worry whether she gets to go to Paris or not? But whatever. But it was one of those things where I thought everybody in it was great. I thought the performances, I thought that the story itself, like some people could watch this and see somebody that's just overworked and always like can't have a moment with their significant other because the phone's always ringing. When somebody sees that and it's just a movie, but it touched such a nerve. It did it very well, where every time she could not relax, I couldn't relax. So like I said, my Saturday night was kind of went down the shitter because I was all smiles. And then halfway through the film, I'm like, is this going to, and my wife's like, no, it does not get any better. It does not. In fact, it probably is going to get worse as far
did
as
you abuse. How many bourbons did you say you had before you started? Three?
I think I had two and a cigar, and then I was on my third watching it. And when I say bourbon, you know, that much in a glass. So,
okay. So, I mean, by that point, did you expect to see like an actual devil wearing Prada clothing? Like, do you think maybe it was a confusion?
It would have helped. It would have helped. No, it's just like I said, it was like at the moment, and that's a testament to the film. Because it's very effective being a comedy drama and putting me in that place and I feeling like I couldn't escape, you know, being in a similar situation. It was either I got kicked out of the Air Force or I did what, you know, I had to buy in. And I did. I bought in full force. And when I left, I will say this, similar to Andy, when I left recruiting and went back to the regular Air Force, after being through that, I knew that I could do anything at any job because I did that. And I was able to live through 4 years of it, three under this individual. And I felt more empowered. However, it took me a long time to trust anybody that was over me as far as a supervisor. I didn't trust. I had like what I call the whip puppy syndrome. Like you beat a puppy so many times, you barely move by it, it's going to flinch. And that's kind of how I was in the workplace, where I just kept my head on a swivel and did what I was told. And I just, it really created a lot of stress in my life. So the way that connects to the movie, and I don't want to keep going down that road, that's the last I'll say about that, is that the way it connects to the movie is it did hit a nerve and captivated me. And I think I was expecting more humor, and the humor that was there, I didn't find funny because it was abusive. And I'm usually the type of person where I can watch
love abuse.
I know.
You've always said that. Sexual, emotional, physical. Like you love all of it. I remember you laughing so hard
at Schindler's List. No. I can deal with like frat guy movies and bullying people, you know, that type of stuff. I can deal with that. This one, the reason it worked on me was that it was playing off of the realism, and it did make me remember things that I didn't want to. So, but I commend it on the way it did it. It is a good film. Probably not something I would watch again for that very reason.
Okay. May I please ask you?
Yes.
Because you are the one of the two of us who knows anything about movies. I'm not saying that The Devil Wears Prada deserves to be looked at, you know, by some graduate student in an academic setting. Mm-hmm. But from an academic standpoint of, you know, like how good movies are different than bad movies, mm-hmm. like, does this move the needle for you in any way, creatively, in any way, characters, in any way?
Yeah, so objectively, taking my personal trauma out of the film and just looking at it as a lover of cinema, I wouldn't say it's perfect. Like we said, it does have its flaws. But overall, performances are tight, especially Meryl Streep and Stanley Tucci. Very easy to watch. And if you can do anything, you can watch those two act and you've got a good film there. The story, as it relates to Anna Wintour and Vogue, and the parallels are very interesting. Looking at the history of the film, she scared so many people that so many designers and models refused to be in the film because they didn't want to piss her off. And that's believable. So when you take that into consideration, as a film crafted wise, I would say it ranks very high on that type of scale of this genre. And like we said, there's a lot of redemption arc movies. There's so many movies where a lot of times it's the dad who works too much and ignores his kid, and the kid's, you know, going through problems and troubles, and then they end up on an adventure and the dad becomes a hero again, you know. So those are great story arcs. And I think in this one, it was played a little bit more to a realistic effect, to where Andy Anne Hathaway's character did not get everything she wanted or thought that she wanted.
Yeah.
And she ended up kind of crashing down and going back to a simpler life, which is what a lot of people strive to do when they go through that type of environment, is you want to strip that away. And Meryl Streep's character is kind of sad because she never gets out of it. She ends up losing her husband. Don't know if she's going to get custody of her kids. It's very sad. And so it's effective. As an objective observer, it's an effectively well done comedy drama.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the insight. I don't know that there's much more to say about this one. I mean, I agree with you. I enjoy it. I don't have the same, you know, experiences with problematic superiors that would tint my, you know, viewing of it. So kind of without having that sitting in the back of my mind, I do just tend to focus on, like I said earlier, the character development and the at what cost element of it. And I think it's done really well. I mean, listen, this movie is a 7.0 on IMDb. Legally Blonde, I think, was a 6.5 or some such. I mean, we're talking about two basically average movies, you know, in their, you know, a C plus type or C minus, you know, type area. Comedies always get judged harder because they're not generally seen as groundbreaking cinema unless it's really something specific, like Blazing Saddles, you know, is seen as really important cinema, even though it's a comedy, when most of those films that are seen that way are dramas. So Legally Blonde, you know, is not going to rank high on anybody's list because it's schmaltzy and it's whatever it is. And Devil Wears Prada, I think good intentions of the story aside, and good performances by the actors and actresses aside, is just okay. But that's why they're guilty pleasures to me. They don't have to be good movies. I guarantee you, everybody's got a list of movies that they can say, I know this movie sucks. I love it anyway. I've got one of those on my list. I picked three that I, you know, that I think are pretty okay. And I know Dude, Where's My Car is the shittiest movie ever made. I love it. You know, so we'll get into that later.
Wait till you watch Roller Boogie.
No, I mean, I didn't want to say that because that's your movie. I'm not trying to poison the well before we get to...
I am not going to sugarcoat it. The movie, I won't say it's bad because I can't look at it as bad. But it's not something that if we're going to sit around, you know, in a living room as a family or a group of friends, and I'm going to pick a movie out, it's the last one I'm going to pick. It's the one I, if I'm by myself, and one I just want
to...
So I would not subject other people to it.
But wait a second. When you say pick a movie, you mean like a DVD?
No, you can do it with streaming. Just pick a movie. The old days, yes, you could pick a movie. But
do you own DVDs?
I do. I own Blu-rays and 4Ks, yes.
And you have like a DVD player?
Yes, I do. I have a 4K player. I have a 4K TV, super high resolution.
I have an 8K
okay
UHD TV.
That's nice.
And an 8 gig player.
I know what UHD stands for.
8 Ds.
Do you like
I don't own any. Yeah, I like CDs.
Do you like UHD?
I don't own a DVD player. I know I could go down to Walmart and get one for like $8, you know, because they're pretty common technology from Bangladesh these days, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But I don't own any DVDs, and I don't really... I mean, do you have like a DVD tower like in your living room, like it's furniture?
I will take a photo and show next episode what my DVD collection looks like. I have Blu-ray.
It's in those towers.
It's in a shelf, just a little shelving unit where they're all lined up in alphabetical.
You remember that though? Remember we used to decorate like our dorm rooms or apartments with fucking towers of DVDs, those are CDs
you slide in like that. These are more lateral, like the old VHS you used to put on a shelf. That's on a shelf. And the 4Ks, I collect the ones that I really, really like. Like I just got the Sean Connery James Bond series on 4K because I love that those movies. So we just watched Dr. No the other night on 4K. It looked great. It's amazing.
Oh, they upscale it or whatever?
It's in 4K. They take the original negative, yes, and it's put into ultra high def. And
it's science.
Michael Bobbitt just asked if I had a laser disc player. No, I do not.
One of those giant?
Yeah, I do not have one of the big giant laser disc players. No.
Betamax or?
Yes, exactly. So, but no, I do have 4K. I enjoy it. I have Jaws in 4K. It's awesome. It's amazing. It looks
cool,
different.
Dude.
It looks different because I do streaming, but I will get a disc of something I really, really, really like, which I like a lot, but
yeah, like Butt Bongo Fiesta 6.
Oh, it's amazing in ultra high def.
Yeah, I bet it is. You can smell the bongos.
You can see the pimples on every ass. It's great.
Yeah.
So to your point on these two films, because we're going to get ready to vote and see which goes on to the next. I don't think Devil Wears Prada is a average film. I do think it's a better film structurally than Legally Blonde. I do think that it's a better film overall in direction, acting, and everything like that. But when it comes to guilty pleasures, I think that the Legally Blonde is one of those that it's like having candy in the middle of the night when you know you shouldn't have. It to me, or you know, sneaking into the fridge to have the, you know, the leftovers when you shouldn't be eating at 12 o'clock at night. That's what Legally Blonde is. And so you walk away. Yeah, you're a little guilty, but man, that eating that whole chocolate cake was pretty damn good. I'm not going to lie. And so to me, it is Devil Wears Prada is the same in a different way. It's like if I had to eat a bag of shit out of an 18 karat gold bag, but I had to eat it, I wouldn't feel good about it.
Yeah, it's still shit. You know?
It's still shit. So that's where I come into play with this. So if I had to vote for one, I'm not down knocking Devil Wears Prada as a film, I think it's an exceptional film. I had more fun and had a great time as a guilty pleasure. And again, I would watch Legally Blonde again. I didn't realize that I liked it as much as I did. And when it was over, I was kind of, I literally looked at my wife, because we'd watched Devil Wears Prada on Saturday and she knew I was traumatized. And then we watched this last night. I looked over, I said, that is a guilty pleasure movie. That is sugary candy that I needed. And it made
I am an evangelist for Legally Blonde. I tell people, like, if you don't like this, you're just being intentionally, like, argumentative, right, or, you know, contrary. Because if you will watch it, then you will like it.
Yep.
So your vote is for Legally Blonde.
For sure.
My vote is for Legally Blonde. Okay.
I was wondering. You sounded pretty high on Devil Wears Prada there for a minute.
I am high on all four of these movies. Oh, that's good. But Legally Blonde, first of all, from a meeting the criteria standpoint,
definitely
is much more of a guilty pleasure. Pleasure is like part of the two-word description we're using for these movies, you know. So it was pleasurable.
Yes.
And, you know, I only feel guilty because I think I'm supposed to, because I really am loud and proud about, like, anybody who knows me knows I like Legally Blonde. Like, it is a joke, and that's fine, because I am unapologetic about the things that I like. So our winner, Greg, for this week, what was the audience vote?
75% of the votes were for Legally Blonde.
Okay.
So it would have won a tiebreak. So yeah, it was.
So really it's Mike who is.
Yeah, Mike's the only one. Mike's the only one.
Who, yeah.
Now, Mike Lebonovitz, I always get tongue-tied when I try to say his name. I wonder if I'm the only one who does it.
Maybe you should stop. He doesn't want you saying his name anyway, and you keep doing it.
We're going to have Mike on in our next category. He's
no.
Okay, then the one after that?
I mean, that sounds great.
But he's been a listener since day one, and he's always here for every episode. So we thank you for your comments. We thank you for everybody else who stopped in and left a comment on the YouTube or on the Facebook Live or the Twitch. We really appreciate it. Mike is on the Twitch. So if you ever want to join us, you know where to find us. We are on YouTube at Box Office Battle Podcast. It's right there on your screen. Twitch is Box Office Battle Pod. And then if you have a suggestion for a future category, or if you want to vote on an upcoming film, you can email us at boxofficebattles@gmail.com. Our next broadcast is going to be on Wednesday. It'll be the 9th of July. Battle 2 in the guilty pleasures bracket is going to be the 2 seed. This is my side of the bracket. Pop star, Never Stop, Never Stopping. And Roller Boogie, the number 7 seed. You're going to love it, Eric. I suggest you have a few bourbons before you watch.
Bourbons, yeah. And then start crying.
And then it'll be so much better if you drink before either of these films. I'm just saying, you'll enjoy it. So check in with us on Wednesday, 9 July, for our next battle, which is Pop Star versus Roller Boogie. Eric, it's been a pleasure, man. Season 2 is started, and we're off and rolling.
We nailed it. We always do that. I don't know why you always say it's going to be terrible. It's going to be awesome. It's always awesome.
Is that it for you?
No, I mean, I want everybody to have a great couple of weeks. If you're in the United States and America, enjoy the 4th of July holiday. Be safe. And until we see you on the 9th, be excellent to each other. We'll see y'all then.
Exactly. Have a great 4th, everyone, and we'll see you on 9 July.